I mix what I like.
What's up, world? Welcome again back to I Mix What I Like. imixwhatilike.org, at I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. Again, I'm Jared Ball. Happy to be your host. And we're joined for this conversation, something that's actually long overdue, a brother I've worked with in the past and had the pleasure of crossing paths with, Michael Calderon-Zax, who is, among many other things, an independent scholar and researcher, someone who has studied and published specifically for our conversation around the issue of internal colonialism theory. And that's what we wanted to talk about. So and let me first welcome you, Michael, to the program. And thanks a lot again for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, you know, I mean, our paths crossed, I don't know, almost 10 years ago already over this issue of internal colonialism theory. And it's come up again. Specifically in relationship to some recent backs and forth at Black Agenda Report with Bruce Dixon, to a certain extent, Kali Akuno, and is some of the backdrop, as I've come to learn belatedly, around this issue of Cooperation Jackson, their approach philosophically, ideologically, politically, and a disagreement they had with Bruce Dixon at Black Agenda Report. And people can look up Bruce's commentary critiquing internal colonialism theory. And as we want to discuss here, at least a little bit, at least from my perspective, there was a lot lacking in that piece. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you. So let me start by just asking you to, for those who may have no idea or maybe a little idea or perhaps an incorrect idea, from your perspective and in your work, what is internal colonialism theory?
That's a good question. So basically, just the way it's developed over time, I mean, it's largely the recognition, although it does have some ambiguities because it was, different theorists had different starting points and it meant different things to different theorists. But generally speaking, it's the notion that, power relationships rooted in colonialism were not necessarily overseas power relationships. You know, they were across a contiguous piece of land. And unfortunately, in order to be understood as colonial relationships, it's not quite understood unless it's, over water, or it's not recognized unless it's over water. So so manifest destiny oftentimes even though the behavior of manifest destiny, for example, it was practically the same thing as what the British did in Ireland, in Africa, in Asia, and so forth. But, one set, because it's overseas, is basically considered colonialism. Well, also because somebody else did it. You know, so we just don't admit to the same things that we don't admit that the U.S. did the same things as the other colonial powers did.
Right. No, I mean, from my perspective, and, this is one of the things that I thought that Bruce's piece was lacking, was that there's very little understanding of the theory and its history. So as I understand it, and there's several ways that people can reach this conclusion, for those who may not be that familiar, it's something that was more or less popularized in this country in the 1960s and 70s and connected to the struggles of Black people, Chicanos and others in this country, Puerto Ricans, indigenous people, certainly, and specifically to say, as you pointed out, that the same process of colonization that occurred between Europe and Latin America, or Europe and the continent of Africa, occurred within the United States between white America as the dominant mother country and all of these internally held colonies. And the relationship, as Jack O'Dell and others had pointed out, wasn't about geography and crossing water as much as it was about a relationship. And yes. Just simply put, when you look at the relationship between Black people collectively and white America collectively, it has a very extractive, to borrow Marissa Baradaran's term recently, or colonial, as I would put it, relationship. That is, As others have pointed out, Black America is where many see all the social ills to be taking place, violence, drugs, prostitution, et cetera. That's where people go. It's like they safari, so to speak, into these communities. Certainly when you hear police discuss policing Black communities, they describe it as going into a foreign territory and fighting a war against a foreign insurgent. When you look at the relationship of the wealth produced by Black America through labor, through cultural, production, the wealth that is created is taken out of the Black community. And for all the billions that hip hop or blues or rock and roll or film have created for others, the Black community still exists in the same relative or devolving condition in relationship to white America and so on. So analytically, a lot of people still through to this day use the colonial model or analogy to raise critiques about notions of citizenship and democracy and the project of the United States itself. What is it here to do in the first place, and have been inspired to some very radical, progressive, and revolutionary ends. And I thought, so when I read something or hear people discussing it without that appropriate context or appreciation, even if you disagree with it, it's frustrating. But anyway, please continue or respond to anything or elaborate on anything that I've said.
Another way to look at it is through the lens of, the coloniality of power, in which Aníbal Quijano articulated it as the power relationships rooted in colonialism that outlasted formal colonialism. Another way to look at it is to look at through the lens of Robert Allen himself, in which he acknowledged that when the police occupy Black communities, that's the language they use too. So it's not like it's a one-way street. It's not like we're making these accusations out of a vacuum. They argue the same thing. They're occupying, foreign territory, and just going back to Black Awakening, Allen documented the role of McGeorge Bundy, who fought the Cold War abroad, and then brought that same approach in the late '60s after cities went up in flames, and so he brought that approach back to the United States, and he used the same language of trying to co-opt the colonies abroad and the colonies here, so within the United States.
And certainly a lot of people, this is the other thing, sometimes it's this theory is associated solely through Marxism and Leninism, and certainly that does have an impact here, but others have come to this from a variety of directions and have used it for a variety of purposes. So, Martin Delaney in the 1800s had a nation within a nation analogy. That certainly, predates the popularity of, at least in this hemisphere and within these communities, of Marxist thought, and predates Lenin certainly. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, Du Bois, Garvey had talked about nations within nations. Du Bois talked about a semi-colony. George Jackson had used the colonial analogy. Malcolm X certainly. Claudia Jones most certainly. Huey Newton and the Black Panther Party at various times and in various formations most certainly. So I mean, the idea that Bruce himself in this sense, we're talking about him, and where I am at least in this sense, a former Panther himself, sort of missed the boat on that as well, that there is certain, Stokely Carmichael and Hamilton, before, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael and Charles Hamilton wrote Black Power. They use that in that analogy quite well and explained it quite well. As you pointed out, Black Awakening in Capitalist America with Robert Allen. So, I mean, this idea that it has no basis or no relevance is, I think, absurd. And I think the theory remains of value as these communities continue to be racialized and nationalized and colonized in their relationship to the United States and the broader economy. So anyway, Michael Calderon-Zacks, let me give you any follow-up or response or a chance just to summarize any concluding thoughts, in our just sort of quick survey response to some conversation about internal colonialism?
Well, I mean, just to resolve like some remaining issues, you know, I mean, I get it. You know, okay, it might not be a great organizing principle, or it may not be a great organizing strategy, because you know, I have students who come into a semester not knowing what colonialism was or ever was. So it's not really in our, I mean, most colonies in the world, most, or at least most formal colonies in the world, have basically become independent, even if it's just, you know, independence in name only. And so I understand the concerns about it being an organizing strategy, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's illegitimate to talk about. It's illegitimate as a, well, it's not just a theory. It's been proven. So it's more.
So, but to me, that makes the theory,
it's much more empirical than many people will care to admit. And if you look at the so-called debunkings, just from my own discipline of sociology, you know, 40 years ago, or more than 45 years ago, and you know, just look at, you know, I mean, those, I mean, I'd like to think that I debunked the very debunkings coming from, say, Michael Burwell, who, you know, basically took this straw man argument. He looked at the weakest points of Robert Blauner and, you know, and attacked them and said, okay, the theory's illegit. But then he never even addressed Robert Allen, who had the strongest critiques, and, you know, and he didn't even address Turay and Hamilton either, you know, who had much stronger critiques and or had much more sound arguments, and or even Harold Cruz had, you know, more sound arguments.
Exactly.
Insofar exactly. as, you know, he moved from strictly being limited to territory to basically saying that the black body was colonized. You know, it, you know, black people were colonized wherever they went. You know, so it's not, so it wasn't strictly, he argued that that was the mistake, or that was the limitation of the Comintern theses of 1928 and 1930, or the so-called Black Belt thesis, in which argued for the right of self-determination for the black majority counties of the South. But then, of course, they didn't apply that to those who had migrated outside the South, you know, to northern cities, and to a lesser degree to California. So
no, but see, that's what, and I apologize for trying to interrupt a few minutes ago, but that was the point I was just wanting to interject, that the not only the continuity of inequality that exists in this country and around the world, but the so-called independence or shifts in image of colonialism require this analysis more than ever, I would think. And that would, you know, so I get that it's maybe not a good initial approach for organizing on a mass base, but if theory and ideology and politics are to be discussed on any serious level, I think it requires some serious consideration, if not, you know, full adoption in use, and that specifically in adhering to the relationship, regardless of the shifting symbols. So it would be important to understand the initial colonial relationship to understand the shifts in symbol of leadership or inclusion or celebrity, or to understand the neo-colonial process. I mean, it would be essential for understanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, of course, people have gone into, you know, insufficient forms of independence or nationhood. But one of the flaws, I think, is that we haven't sufficiently addressed or organized around the concept of colonialism, which demands these shifts that continue to confuse and trick us. But anyway, now please do take any real final conclusion. I do want you to have the last word, but I just wanted to throw that in there real quick.
No, I mean, our modern world is rooted in colonialism. All the inequalities in our modern world are rooted in colonialism. And these power relationships have outlasted formal colonial rule. And I mean, they've mutated here and there, but, you know, for the most part, you know, those, you know, so these were, yeah, these were indeed colonial constructs. But having said that, you know, if we can build these things out of colonialism, we can deconstruct colonialism and, you know, destroy these isms that are rooted there.
All right, there it is. Well, again, Michael Calderon-Zax, thank you very much for joining me for this discussion of internal colonialism theory. We greatly appreciate you taking the time. To you, as we say about Fred Hampton all the time, as he said, peace if you're willing to fight for it. So thank you. And to all those listening, we say the same peace to you as well. So thanks again and take care. We'll catch you all in the whirlwind.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot for listening to that interview. And don't forget that there's a lot more multimedia at imixwhatilike.org that deals with this and many related topics. So see you there. Peace. I mix what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like.